Morning, we're reading from Sri Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chittaketu, Texts 1 through 5. This is number 5 on the board. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Alingyan kikritam devim. Alinyan kikritam devim. Bahu namuni shamsadhi. Uvacha devya shrinvantya. Uvacha devya shrinvantya. Jahasochai starantike. Jahasochaistarantiki Alingyan kit kitam devim Bahunamuni samsadi Vacha devya shivanti Jahasochaistarantiki Alingyan kit kitam devim Bahu namuni samsadhi Vachi devya shrinvantya Jaha sochai starantiki I won't read the word for word because there's two verses combined for in this translation. Translation one time, while King Chittaketu was traveling outer space on a brilliant effulgent airplane given to him by Lord Vishnu, he saw Lord Shiva surrounded by siddhas and charanas. Lord Shiva was sitting in an assembly of great saintly persons and embracing Parvati on his lap with his arm. Chitaketu laughed loudly and spoke within the hearing of Parvati. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, it's purple by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in this connection, Bhaktim Bhutim Hare Dattva Savichedanhu Bhutaye Devya Shapena Vitratvam Nitvatam Santike Nayat. The purport is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to bring Chitaketu to Vaikuntha Loka as soon as possible. The Lord's plan was that Chitaketu be cursed by Parvati to become Vitrasura, so that in his next life he could quickly return home back to Godhead. There have been many instances in which a devotee acting as a demon has been brought to the kingdom of God by the mercy of the Lord. For Parvati to be embraced by Lord Shiva was natural in the relationship between husband and wife. This was nothing extraordinary for Chitaketu to see. Nonetheless, Chitaketu laughed loudly to see Lord Shiva in that situation, even though he should not have done so. Thus he was eventually cursed, and this curse was the cause of his returning home back to Godhead. I read from text 1. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after offering obeisances to the direction from which Ananta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had disappeared, Chitaketu began traveling in outer space as the head of the Vidyadharas. Texts 2 and 3. Being praised by great sages and saints, and by the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, Chitaketu, the most powerful mystic yogi, wandered about enjoying life for millions of years with bodily strength and senses free from deterioration. He traveled within the valleys of Sumeru Mountain, which is a place of perfection for various kinds of mystic power. In those valleys, he enjoyed life with the women of Vidyadhara Loka by chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari. Purport. It is to be understood that Maharaj Chitaketu, although surrounded by beautiful women from Vidyaharaloka, did not forget to glorify the Lord by chanting the holy name of the Lord. It has been proved in many places that one who is not contaminated by any material condition, who is a pure devotee engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, should be understood to be perfect. 4 and 5. One time, while Chitaketu was traveling in outer space on a brilliant effulgent aeroplane given to him by Lord Vishnu, he saw Lord Shiva surrounded by siddhas and charanas. Lord Shiva was sitting in an assembly of great saintly persons and embracing Parvati on his lap with his arm. Chitaketu laughed loudly and spoke within the hearing of Parvati. There's an overview of the chapter. The 17th chapter is summarized as follows. Summary. This chapter describes Chitaketu's receiving the body of an asura, a demon, because of joking with Lord Shiva. After personally talking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Chitaketu enjoyed life in his aeroplane with the women of the Vidyahara planet, engaging in the congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord. He began flying his plane and traveling in outer space. One day, while traveling like this, he wandered into the bowers of Sumeru Mountain, where he came upon Lord Shiva embracing Parvati, surrounded by an assembly of siddhas, charanas, and great sages. Seeing Lord Shiva in that situation, Chitaketu laughed very loudly. But Parvati became very angry at him and cursed him. Because of this curse, Chitaketu later appeared as a demon, Vritasura. Chitaketu, however, was not at all afraid of Parvati's curse, and thus he spoke as follows. Everyone in human society enjoys happiness and distress according to his past deeds, and in this way travels in the material world. Therefore, no one is responsible for his happiness and distress. One is controlled by the influence of the material nature in the material world, yet one thinks himself the doer of everything. In this material world, which is made of the external energy of the Supreme Lord, one is sometimes cursed and sometimes favored. And thus he sometimes enjoys in the upper planetary systems and sometimes suffers in the lower planets. But all these situations are the same because they are within this material world. None of these positions has any factual existence, for all of them are temporary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller because the material world is created and maintained and annihilated under his control, while he, nonetheless, remains neutral to these different transformations of the material world in time and space. The material external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in charge of this material world. The Lord helps the world by creating situations for the living entities within it. When Chittaketu spoke in this way, all the members in the great assembly in which Lord Shiva and Parvati were present were astonished. Then Lord Shiva began speaking about the devotees of the Lord. A devotee is neutral in all conditions of life, whether in the heavenly planets or hellish planets, whether liberated from the material world or conditioned by it, and whether blessed with happiness or subject to distress. These are all merely dualities created by the external energy. Being influenced by the external energy, the living entity accepts a gross and subtle material body, and in this illusory position he apparently suffers miseries, although everyone is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. The so-called demigods consider themselves independent lords, and in this way they are misled from understanding that all living entities are a part of the Supreme. This chapter concludes by glorifying the devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. End of summary. Magyantanandasya gyanangyan salakaya chakshurnitam tasmai sri gurave namaha. Mam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishaya Bhutare Simhati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharine Nevishesha Shandavari Parasati Satani Bhavar Kijaya. We are beginning a new chapter. The question was how did Vritasura, who was said he was actually a devotee in a demon's body, how can a devotee take the body of a demon? So this chapter will explain how a pure devotee became a demon. And the answer, of course, is by the Lord's desire. As mentioned here, the Lord wanted Chittaketu to come back quickly, so therefore he arranged that he take that body of Vritasura. Now, why the Lord did it like that? Why he would make him a demon for one? Why didn't he take him back at the end of this birth? He was missing him. It says the Lord was feeling some separation, wanted him back. So why should he have to take birth as a demon to come back? Well, he doesn't. But this is the way Krishna wanted it. And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so we have to give him his space, his dues. It's his program. So we may be able to understand. We think, well, if I was, why would he do that? In other words, if I was God, I would have done it a different way. That's how we think. Why would he do that? I would have done it a different way. But there are many reasons why he does what he does, Lord Krishna, when he arranges something or everything. He's arranging everything ultimately, and he's serving so many different purposes. So the purpose here, there are many purposes here that we can draw on. This is a very, very famous, glorified this section in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's so much deep knowledge and of the ways Krishna act, the ways the devotees act, and the glories of devotional service, chanting the holy names of the Lord. In this chapter, we'll hear that after Chittaketu is cursed, he's not Parvati cursed him. You're a king. He sees him flying around in a fantastic aeroplane, given by Vishnu, mind you, with lots of beautiful women, and he's a king. And he dares to laugh at Lord Shiva, who is the guru of the universe. so she becomes a little annoyed, and she curses him to become a demon. Lord Shiva didn't say anything. The sages didn't say anything, because Lord Shiva didn't say anything. Then the sages, they also kept mum. The Shiva knows best. If he's not saying, we won't say anything. That's the etiquette. Parvati, however, she spoke. And you're supposed to be a devotee of the Lord. And he's a darshan of the Lord. And the Lord has given you this facility, such opulence. And, you know, he gave him that airplane, gave him long life. He made him the king of the Vidyaharas. And you become puffed up. You know, devotees are not supposed to become proud. I curse you, you become a demon. You're acting improperly. And Chittaketu smiles. And he's not fazed. And then he pays his obeisances and says, I'm very sorry for offending you. And he starts to preach to them. And they, as I mentioned, they were all amazed. All the sages there, others, residents of other planets, perfect people from different planets and sages. And they was all astonished at the tattva that he spoke. That he's actually a completely surrendered soul to the Lord. Completely free from the influence of the material energy. Completely aloof from the material energy. Of course, some stalkers, they will speak like he's, you know, he didn't, you know, he did say, he shouldn't have said it, right? He shouldn't have spoken loudly in front of, you know, he shouldn't, even if she was sitting on his lap in public, in an assembly of sages, he shouldn't have said anything, okay? And so some stalkers will say that he was wrong, and some will say that he wasn't wrong, and so we go by... The whole story of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is to impress on us. It's not just a storyline that we follow. It's the realizations, the instructions we get from these stories, the instructions we got for how to behave properly, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. What the pure devotees do, what the attached devotees do, what the non-devotees do, what the demons do, what the demigods do. So all this is very clearly explained so that we can understand the things in their... we can see things in their proper perspective, different positions of different grades of living entities. And then we can conclude from the perfect living entity are those who are actually surrendered to the Lord. And he's completely detached. He's just a darshan of the Lord. The Lord has blessed him with pure devotion. as we heard yesterday, the slokas yesterday, the Lord, he was saying, persons who try to reach the ultimate goal of life, that's us, right? We propose, everyone's trying to reach the ultimate goal, must expertly observe the Supreme Absolute Truth and the living entity, who are one in quality with their relationship as part and the whole. In other words, we should always remember, it says expertly observe. It means we should be conscious of our position as the eternal servant of the Lord. Krishna Das, you know, that we're one in quality it says, in their relationship as part and a whole. It means we're the part, we're the servant of Krishna, we're the eternal servant of Krishna. This is first and foremost, and now should be first and foremost in our consciousness. We have two rules, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. The same principle, always remember Krishna, and always remember that we're the servants of Krishna. That's it. Anything outside of that is not very substantial, because that's the eternal principle. So, and it continues, this is the ultimate understanding of life. There's no better truth than this. So, we're looking for truth, we're looking for understanding, this is it. To understand that we're the eternal servant of Krishna, but in every step of life, I mean, the whole day, whatever we do, we understand we're the servant of Krishna. And when we remember that, when we think like this, then we can do our activities in the mood of a servant also, as we are the servant, we're doing for his pleasure. So then immediately that false ego is squished. Because normally in the material world, under the direction of false ego, we're trying to take the position of the Lord. We're trying to act for our pleasure. That's what everyone is doing. And then he says, next loka, O king, if you accept this conclusion of mine, being unattached to material enjoyment, so this is work that we have to do to become unattached, adhering to me with great faith, and thus becoming proficient and fully aware of knowledge and its practical application in life. It means sambandha and abhideya, being proficient, fully aware of knowledge and its practical application in life, because you have to apply knowledge. Knowledge means, if you don't apply knowledge, then knowledge is lost. So knowledge means to practice. It means to do something, to think. Either subtle or gross knowledge, it means to act on that knowledge, and then the realization will come. It needs the two components, the sambandha and the abhideya. The understanding and the practical application, those two, when they're gelled, then that brings the prayojan, that brings the goal, that brings a realization. Well, it doesn't work with just on one. And if you do this, then you will achieve the highest perfection by attaining it. So he's already gave him these great instructions and so many other instructions about the futility of material existence. And Chittaketu is also going to repeat these instructions to Parvati, and thus by speaking to Parvati and Shiva, then he's addressing the whole assembly of Charanas and Siddhas, and all the sages are there. So there's a purpose, there's a reason behind this. Now all these people are getting enlightenment. They become astonished. Here's a king in an airplane surrounded by beautiful women. He's astonishing the rishis by his transcendental knowledge. And he's mild. He's not fazed when he gets cursed to become a demon. He said, I'm sorry if I offended you, I shouldn't have done it. But anyway, I'm not really worried, because I'm not interested in happiness or maintaining happiness. And indirectly, he was also teaching Parvati that she was attached to happiness, because she thinks I curse him to become a demon, his happiness will be ruined. So this is a perfection of life, a happiness. So, but he said, it doesn't matter. He said, you don't have to withdraw your curse. I'll take it. He said, you know, whether you're, it's all the same thing in the material world. Whether you're happy or distressed, it's just the modes of nature that are moving. There's the living entity is always actually aloof from it in truth. When one is realized, like Chittaketu is, he's always actually aloof from it, he's understanding. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the self-realized soul sees only, it's only the modes of nature that are moving. And the bewildered soul thinks that he's the doer of all the activities, which was actually so that's a difference. One thinks that he's doing it, and one thinks that the modes of nature are doing it. So, and that's what, and she is working under the authority and position of the Supreme Lord. And here we're talking to Durga, Maya Devi herself. So, if she's bewildered by the coming into contact with that pure unalloyed devotee in her position, then what to speak of anyone else? Then how can anyone else not be bewildered? If the goddess of bewilderment, she's talking, she's bewildered, she's bewildering everyone in the universe. Because everyone in the universe thinks we think we're the Dura, right? We think by our ability we're going to do something. We all think like that. But actually, one can't do anything. It's all we think we're doing something. That means we can move this material energy, we can adjust this material energy, adjust our life, and then we can be peaceful and enjoy it. Enjoy the situation. We become free from the problems and enjoy it, and then we'll be peaceful. Then we can be happy, right? This is what we want. It's what everyone is. This is the human endeavor, not only humans, every living entity, moving living entity, is striving for these two things. but it's actually illusory. It's, as Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita many times, it's humanely impossible to actually control the senses. Still, you're advised to try to control the senses. But actually, no, it's not actually possible to control the senses. To become free from the influence of Durga, Devyashi Gunamaya. Gunamayi Mama Maya Dhyatya is very difficult to overcome. In other words, not possible. We're under her control. We're under the control of it. We're still identifying with the material energy, trying to move it and trying to become free from it. One of those two things, to enjoy it or to become free from it. this is a great illusion. And even the mistress of that illusory energy, she's bewildered. I mean, she's astonished by the position of Chittaketu. Because he's actually living that. He's actually understanding that he's eternal servant of Krishna, and he's engaged in serving Krishna. He's flying around. His external situation, he's in a super aeroplane, and he's surrounded by beautiful women. Now, we immediately conjure a picture up, right? Boy, I wish I was there. Oh, he's got a situation that he's really enjoying, right? He's a really enjoyer. That's our condition, but... It's not different from him whether he's sitting under a tree dressed in a deer skin with nothing, or he's in an airplane as a king with all the opulence. For he's not attached to that. he's a king. He lives like a king. If he's a rishi, he lives like a rishi. Okay? Whatever as long as that consciousness remains, then the external energy is going to move in according to your karma. You're going to take birth in this body and this situation or not. So that's going to go on anyway. You don't have to endeavor for that. You really can't change your destiny, your karma. The future you can strive for, but now we really can't squeeze any more out of life than what we're supposed to. We can't make our life any more comfortable. We can't make our life really any more enjoyable, because what's going on, we're being moved, and the results of our previous pious and impious activities are being sent to us one after the other. That's more or less it. But we're making programs how to avoid that, how to avoid our karma. How can you do that? By adjusting the material energy. The material energy means karma. The whole thing is karma. But we're trying to do the impossible. So the secret is for the devotees that you don't, the devotee doesn't, as Prabhupada said, doesn't try to enjoy the material energy, doesn't try to enjoy his body, senses, and doesn't try to get out of it. So what's left? If you're not trying to do that, if you're not trying to enjoy your body or trying to become free from the effects of the body, what else is left? There's nothing else left in the material world. Because that's all there is to life, right? That's the success of life. You can do those two things. So then if you're not doing that, then you have there's no meaning to the material life. Of course, then, but the positive thing is, then, it's you, that time you've saved, it means all the time. You can be serving Krishna. You'll be back in your original constitution as understanding you're the eternal servant of Krishna. And that's liberation, immediate liberation. Prabhupada said liberation means when one acts as prakriti instead of purusha. That's liberation. So we have to appreciate our actual condition. We are prakriti. We're meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. But we're going to Krishna so he can to fulfill our material enjoyment in the beginning stages of devotion. So here we see Chittaketu is way above that. So it was unavoidable. So this means that was the but this is not going on under the dictates of the material energy. This is not going under Maya. This is going under the Lord's program. Chittaketu, he shouldn't have laughed, but he did. Right? The Lord prompted him to laugh. Devi shouldn't have got angry with him. Shiva didn't become angry. Shiva was just smiling. Because he's on the same platform. She shouldn't have came angry and cursed him, but she did. Why? Because that was the Lord's program. Then everyone gets enlightened. And everyone gets astonished. The clarity and the enlightenment that he has, he's actually... What we're talking about, he's actually living. This is what they're saying. What we're hearing about, he's actually living it. Realized it. So this is the... So everything is going on by the Lord's will. And then he takes the birth as Vritrasura. And then he astonishes the demigods. He chastises the demigods and he chastises the demons. The demons... We've read this. We've read this section. The demons he chastises for, first of all, running away from battle, being cowards, and he started to chastise them like that. What are you doing, running away? It's a glorious thing to die in battle. You don't know your duty. He was talking to them about success and failure in the material world and fame and things like that. And he chastised and made them embarrassed. And then he embarrassed the demigods, embarrassed Indra. When Indra dropped the thunderbolt weapon, and Indra became fearful and all the demigods became fearful, then he said, what are you worried about? He said, "This, you have no faith in Vishnu, in the Supreme Lord. How beautiful, he gave you that weapon to kill me. And you think you're finished." He said, pick it up, fight. So he's embarrassing him. He said, "The Supreme Lord has given you that weapon to kill me. He's given me pure devotion. He gave you a weapon. You're so attached to your demigods, you're so materialistic. You go pray to the Lord appears before you." Physically or voice, I don't know. But anyway, they got the darshan of the Lord. He appeared before there and he asked, what do you want? And you asked him for a weapon to kill me. He says, why didn't you ask to go back to Godhead? Why didn't you ask for pure devotion? You know about pure devotion because the demigods were talking about, you know about pure devotion, you know that's the ultimate goal of life, so why didn't you ask him for that instead of a weapon so you can kill me so you can maintain your high material position, enjoy it, everyone enjoy it. They became embarrassed. So he's embarrassing everyone. So this was the Lord, by inspiring these people, devotees, to act in such a way, then there's so much pertinent instructions and nice reading for those who are not so devotional. Bhagavatam is very exciting, so many different stories in there. It's interesting because in Kali Yuga, the people are not very philosophically inclined. So therefore the essential knowledge of the Vedas has been translated into the Puranas. People like stories, histories, they like a storyline, they like some adventure, romance, and excitement, right? Intrigue. That's how it's presented, that's how the philosophy is presented. So here we have, therefore we have great stories in the Bhagavatam, great stories, kings, rishis, demigods, renunciates, helpless women, all kinds of things, galaxial wars, and so it's interesting. We can keep on reading, and then, but in between, we get in all the purpose of it is to transmit the transcendental message that the Lord wants us to hear, that we're actually His eternal servants, and we should be engaged in His service. We've forgotten who we are, and so that this is all to remind us, to reawake us to our original position, that we can once again be engaged in the service of the Lord. So he said, so then Lord Krishna, Lord Shankarshan, the Shishnaga, who was appeared before Chittaketu and blessed him all this knowledge. But he said, you have to understand this knowledge, then you have to apply this knowledge. And that's it. This is the greatest truth. He said, there's no truth. There's no truth greater than this. There's no truth better than this, he said. But you should consciously remember your actual relationship with the Lord as servant. We don't know our form of the Lord, of our spiritual form, but we should understand we are the servant of the Lord. That applies to everyone. How you're a servant of the Lord in reality, in the spiritual world, that may be revealed in due course of time. But right now we know everyone is a servant of the Lord. Jivasupoi Nitya Krishna Das, we are the servant of Krishna. So this should be the our understanding, this should be our belief, and this should be our conviction, and this should be our practice. We should put that conviction into practice. And that will keep us insulated from the material world, from the modes of nature. And as soon as you forget, then the modes of nature, you will be back in the modes of nature again. And then there's a struggle with the modes of nature. You start to identify with it, then you start to make these arrangements, how to avoid the problems and how to enjoy the situation. But nobody is actually successful. Nobody can control their senses. It's physically impossible to completely control the senses. We don't hear of it. Some rishis we hear about, but even they're subject to... There's only one or two that actually pass the test. Markandeya Rishi, but great other rishis, Vishwamitra, and is that one who's meditating underwater, yogi, trying to control their senses, they couldn't do it. So what to speak of the ordinary people, what to speak of Kali Yuga? So it's actually, you can't actually do it. You can't actually overcome Maya. She's too powerful. So if you don't have the ability to do it, then what's the hope? So the ability, Krishna gives that ability in the form of, he says, you surrender to me, you take shelter of the holy name. He takes shelter of my service. That's something you can practically do. We hope, we can wish and pray for the mercy of the Lord, but he's given us something we can engage our services, our senses in. We can hear, we can chant the names of Krishna. And take shelter of Krishna, take shelter of His name, that's all. That's all. And take shelter of His service. And by doing these things, then you're insulated, first thing you're liberated from the material energy, because now you're not interacting, you're not trying to enjoy, you're not trying to control. So first of all, the immediate thing is liberation. Devotional service starts on the platform of liberation. So immediately you're liberated from karma when you do that. And then the next thing is, from that point, you're dependent on the mercy of the Lord. You're waiting for the mercy of the Lord. You're acting, right? We're acting for perfection. We want perfection, so we think that by practicing sadhana bhakti we can get perfection, sadhana siddhi. But we know it's not easy, and we don't feel actually competent. That when we know we do, we think we're going to do it by our sadhana. But after some time, we realize, hey, it's not as easy as I thought it was by your own sadhana. So then we come to the, we start to understand that actually we're dependent on the mercy of the Lord. The two fingers, the endeavor of the living entity, and ultimately the mercy of the Lord. So then we start to become, to surrender to the mercy of the Lord. We start to think more of the mercy of the Lord, of praying for the mercy of the Lord, rather than the concentrating on the sadhana, that this is gonna get me through. Now that sadhana will insulate you, but if we're actually remembering the Lord, because in sadhana sometimes we don't remember the Lord, we just remember the sadhana. I do this, we're just attached to the rule of doing it properly, you know, perfecting our whatever, perfecting our service, perfecting our knowledge, perfecting our trying to perfect our ability. But it's still, you need the mercy of the Lord is the essential ingredient. So that's what we want to be dependent. Then we realize that I take shelter of the Lord. So that can come by sadhana. If you're completely strict, really strict in sadhana, and you're doing everything you can, and when you come to the point where you realize I'm leaving everything out there, and it's not enough. I'm pulling my seeker out. It's not enough. I can't do anymore. I reach my limits of ability. So at that time, then you'll become helpless. Then you realize you're actually dependent on Krishna's mercy. And then Krishna, at that stage, Krishna will reveal himself to you by his sweet will. That's his promise. But we hope him. Yes, sir, so that's what we're hoping. So that's what sadhana will do. It'll bring you to the point of actually surrender. It's not by my endeavor. I'm understanding, I'm depending on the mercy of the Lord. So then we surrender to the mercy of the Lord. And what is that mercy? The mercy is the service. What we call sadhana, it's bhakti. The process is bhakti. So we surrender to that. We surrender into that process. We surrender to the holy name as being Krishna. We're not using it anymore as a means of deliverance or a means of advancement. We're using it as it is the goal itself. We're appreciating it as the goal itself. So that's the consciousness that we want to achieve. That's how the process of sadhana works. Because it's Krishna, it's purifying and it's insulating from Maya. And then when we're serious, then that realization will naturally come, because that's the natural constitution of the living entity. When the impurities have been cleansed, jetodhāpana mājanam, then the actual bhakti comes out, because that's what we are, bhaktas. Everyone is nitya bhakta. Jivasarūpoi nitya Krishna-dās. That's the eternal, that's our actual constitution. So that will naturally start to manifest when the misgivings or the coverings go away. So we call that knowledge or understanding, anātta nivṛtti. They go away by that. But that's also the mercy of the Lord, or the mercy of bhakti itself, the mercy of the name. But this is what we want to come to. We want to come to this understanding. So Krishna says, this is the best thing to do, but you've got to be conscious. He says, you've got to be conscious of it. You've got to expertly observe the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity. Expertly, it means you're consciously understanding that I am his servant. Then you're always remembering Krishna. And then when we're doing something, we understand I'm doing this as a service to Krishna. Not as a means of my deliverance, as a means of my get rid of my bad karma, as a means of being successful in life, or achieving, you know, fame or something like that. No, I'm doing it as, and that is perfection. Now we're doing what we're supposed to do, because that's free from any self-interest of karma and gyan. That's the whole point. They're free from the desire for any prestige or fame or happiness, or free from any miseries. Those two will go. Those two will go. Has to have to go away. But you can't do it by itself. You can't just work on those two. You don't work on the negative. You work on the positive. So you put Krishna there. You forcibly force yourself to remember Krishna and the eternal self of Krishna. Then everything else goes away automatically once you're doing that. Huh? Where there is Krishna, Maya cannot stand. So that's the quickest way, is to remember, put Krishna there. Then you don't have to worry about, he'll do the purifying. He'll give you that peace, that happiness that you're looking for. Automatically, it's already there. So all these wonderful instructions we get from these pastimes, which we're reading, although they're difficult to understand why the Lord arranges it in such a way, but he has his reasons, and many reasons, and he could have done it another way, but he did it this way. So we're happy that he did it this way, and we can hear these fantastic stories and hear this, get this fantastic information, and give us a great enthusiasm to actually put what we've learned, put what we've heard into practice. That's the main thing, actually apply it. Say Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jati Ketu ki, yeah. Srivobhadi ki jay, Tai Gopanandi. Feel free to leave now, we're over time. If there's a question, we can answer. The mic.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. And you mentioned that a devotee, when the Lord tells him, what do you want, he says that I only want pure devotional service. Sometimes we are asked by devotees, how can I serve you, what do you want, or sometimes the spiritual master. So many times it happens and I don't know what to say, I feel. And is it then right or the same to say, as these answers that you gave, is the same to say, well, I wish I could please the devotees and Krishna by the service I am rendering. Each one of us has a specific service. So would that be a similar reply to
that? Your answer would be that you could reach Krishna by your service?
Yes, simply please the devotees and Krishna by offering a nice service.
Yeah, very good. If that's the intention, we want, to please Krishna or please the devotees, that's very good. But you also could, you should also take it a little deeper and say, what is my reason in pleasing the devotees and Krishna? You should also ask that question, because there may be some still personal something attached to it. So also go back again, question that also.
The service we have is being given to us by the spiritual master. So still the service can be mixed, of course. So although it is being given by the spiritual master, still there are mixture there.
Yeah, we say we just want to serve the spiritual master, serve the devotees. But Is that actually a fact? So you ask yourself, why you want to please the spiritual master? Why do I want the pleasure of the devotees? Because then I became famous as a big devotee, or I will get this, or I'm until you practically, until you establish your relationship with Krishna, you can't. That's so, some selfishness is a. Practically speaking. Because unless we're the eternal servants of, unless we realize we're the eternal servants of Krishna, then it means we're mixed with some, there's some self-interest. Because you are the eternal servant of Krishna. That's your position. If you haven't understood that, it means there's a mixture there. Something is there. And that something else is that you're still interested in our own service, in being satisfied and happy. We still have a position in there. So that will last all the way up until you actually establish your relationship with Krishna. it'll get less and less, but it's going to be there, you see. What is it? If you're not a pure unalloyed devotee, what is it that's mixed with it? It's going to come back to yourself, because we see everything in relation with ourself in the material world. So it would come down to those two things, for my happiness or my comfort. So I'm serving the devotees, and I want the devotees' pleasure, then I'll be recognized as a humble devotee, as a good devotee, as a pure devotee, or I'll get the maha plate, or I'll get the facility. So there's always something there until you establish a relationship with Krishna fully.
Then what is the solution?
What is the solution?
Yes, there is
always some
mixture there.
Yeah. Well, where you continue wherever you're at, but you have to understand the ultimate purpose. The ultimate thing is service to Krishna without any desire for your happiness or your comfort. That's what blew their minds here when Krishna Caitanya says, "I don't mind. You curse me, go ahead. It doesn't matter to me. Whether I'm in the body of a demon or take birth as a demon on the earth or somewhere, or I'm the king of Vidyahara, it doesn't matter. Whatever you want." So that's the situation. He's actually not phased because he's fixed there. He's already in that pure devotional mode. So for him, it really doesn't matter. But even for Parvati, she was astonished. It means there was something in her, whether it was the Lord's covering on her, but made her speak like that. You know, she's a mistress of Maya. She's a pure devotee. But even she was astonished. I'm going to make you suffer. He said, how can you make someone suffer? You're suffering according to your previous impious activities. You can't make anyone suffer, nor you can give anyone happiness. So he just put them all straight, and he gave them, you know, very high transcendental knowledge. So even Parvati, so what is the hope for you? Even Parvati, even Lord Brahma, so what is the hope for you? That's why we work very sincerely to perfect our sadhana, but we're hoping against hope for that Kripa Siddhi, the mercy of Krishna. So that's the best thing. That's the best thing. So then, that's quicker to surrender like that. When you realize, but when you're convinced you're dependent on the mercy of Krishna, there's no hope for me. So when you come to that platform of there's no hope, really, that's very good. That's a good platform to be on. Because now it's easy to surrender. If you don't have any hope yourself, then you have no recourse but to surrender to Krishna. Right? There's no, you have no hope. So then you can surrender to Krishna, or his representative. So that's a good position. That's what we want to come to. That's the purpose of sadhana bhakti, to come to that situation. When you've done it, when you're doing everything, when you left everything out there, when you've done, you haven't got anything else to give, you can't give anything else, you're giving your best, you're giving 100% of your everything, you can't do anymore, then what are you going to do? Then you realize it's not dependent on me. It's Krishna's sweet will. So then he'll definitely appear, but he may appear before that, you know, even if you're not 100%. But at least that time he's definitely appeared. Because now when you actually surrendered down, now he's serious. Now he's understood he needs my help. Before we're chanting Hare Krishna, but we're still attached to our independence and our being the doers and the controllers. We haven't given that idea up, you see. So that's why Krishna's given us this old age and death. That finishes that up very quickly. Your last few days, you get through that, you get that experience very quickly. That's how Krishna's planned it. Your whole life you wouldn't do it, now you do it. Now you realize you're dependent on Krishna. Struggle to get for air, that's difficult. What a speak of joy, forget it. Just to stay alive, just to defend, just the next breath. Then you realize you're dependent on Krishna. I am dependent on Krishna. Earth, water, fire, air, it's Krishna's energy. If he doesn't hold it, one breath, you're finished. That time you have good realization for the devotees. So that's why we see many devotees We may not be, you know, big devotees, Purana lay devotees, but we see it appears they went back to Godhead. Quite a number. It appears like that from all the symptoms. Because you get that, because all this knowledge you have, it's incredible knowledge that we have it. And then it all falls into place at that time, that you are, Krishna is the, we are dependent on Krishna. And you have nowhere else to surrender. Your senses have let you down. It's just a bag of suffering. And then you realize it is a bag of suffering. And your mind is going haywire. There's no shelter. No. Where else will you go? You're bound to surrender to Krishna at that time. Because we've been hearing about Krishna all the time. We're trying to learn to love Him and trying to serve Him. And now this is it. Now this is it. We have Krishna. There is no other. There is nowhere else for me to turn. Then your next birth, you'll take birth in Bhumi Vrindavan, where Krishna is, and you'll get all your necessary credentials then. Bhava, prema, and then go back to Golok. Good luck. Okay.
Life is consists of trying to enjoy in the material body, and then trying to maintain the material body or keep it going. So I've noticed that, like, if I'm around young people, they usually talk about enjoyment, what their plans that they have and things that they're going to do. And then when I'm around older people, they always talk about cures and different doctors and places that you can go to fix this and fix that. So how does that, when we come to Krishna conscious, how do we really where do we drop both of those projects? Like, you know, everybody's always, you know, we want to maintain the body so we can use it in Krishna service and not be disturbed by, you know, all of our ailments. But at the same time, we don't want to make our goal in life just trying to maintain the body. So where do we? But how can somebody in the path of surrender, you know, drop off from both of those? The not just the desire to enjoy, but the desire to maintain.
That's what we're learning. That is our philosophy. That's what we want to become free from, karma and gyan. We want to be free from those two things: the desire to enjoy and the desire to control. But in the meantime, you just have to tolerate. You have to live with it. But you should be as indifferent as possible to those. You can't stop desire. So according to your previous karmas or Krishna's arrangement, they're going to come. Those desires are going to come. Now, whether you act on them, that's your freedom. That's your independence. The desire is there. Krishna will give that desire, because it's your karma, and it'll present the situation. The material energy will present the situation, and Krishna as a super soul, he'll remind you, here it is, this is time to enjoy your time to get out of here. Now it's up to you to act on those, that desire or that impulse. So that's in your control. if either by philosophy, by determination, then you can just try and get away from that and focus on Krishna, on devotional service. Or unless you have a taste, and then it's easy. When the pure devotees, they tolerate that. It's just there. It doesn't go away. Of course, Krishna does reduce your bad karma. He said, It is there for everyone. Like Prabhupada said, when he was immense, his body was, don't think this won't happen to you. Shock, devotee. So yeah, everyone's got to go through it. But we see Prabhupada was quite indifferent to it. He didn't complain much about his situation, which physically, medically was a horrible situation. according to the doctor. You couldn't normally live in that situation where there's no flesh, the skin and the bones and the nerves. But Prabhupada didn't complain about that. And rather, he was getting on with his service of translating books, etc. He's the acharya, so he's setting an example. But it was definitely there. But he wasn't focusing on it. He was just accepting it. So you can't. Material body is actually awarded for suffering, and that gives it the impetus to become free from it. And enjoyment will make you more attached, but the other side. So at the end, it's suffering. It's not enjoyment. The end of the day, the end of your life. Like you said, when you're young, you don't care about anything. Even you get sick, you don't care. You carry on. It goes away. When you get old, you get sick. You don't care. It doesn't go away. Then you start to take care. Defense is the first consideration. If you're not safe or not secure, then you don't think about enjoying. So actually, that's the first consideration. But when you're young, strong, healthy, and get the whole world is yours, then you don't care about anything. You become intoxicated with your youth. Then you get to, when you get old, then you get a little sober. So, and that the last part is the most sobering. Now, what are you going to do? So you have to tolerate those things. The desires will come. Jamuna Charya, he says, when I think of sex life with a woman, I spit on the door. What's he doing thinking of sex life with a woman? He's a Jamuna Charya, he's a pure devotee. But somehow or other, these thoughts will come, these impressions will come, desires will come. You can't be without desire, you see. We're a living entity. So the desires are going to be there, but whether you act on them or not, that is your prerogative. So if you act on those material desires, then that's karma. And if you tolerate them and turn to Krishna at that time, then that's transcendental. You have to tolerate. They don't go away. It may be reduced by Krishna's mercy, but okay. Sarva Bhavati Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.